This morning, our speaker is our own Jill Austin. Jill is the chair of the UUFM Worship Committee. She is a faculty member and department chair in the Department of Management at MTSU. She teaches courses in leadership, ethics, and nonprofit management. Jill will speak on the topic, The Legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Let's welcome Jill.
Good morning. Each year, we honor the life of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. in public gatherings, marches, and a day of service. A few days after Dr. King was killed in 1968, some legislators began working for approval of a federal holiday to honor Dr. King. The holiday was first celebrated as a national holiday in 1986 after legislation was approved by Congress and signed by President Reagan in 1983. It was 1993 before every state legislature had approved a state holiday for Dr. King in some form. At that time, some states called their holiday Civil Rights Day. By 1999, every state legislature had adopted the third Monday in January as Martin Luther King Jr. Day and a state holiday. The holiday to honor Dr. King has not been without controversy and without people trying to minimize his impact on our country. You may remember that in 1987, the Arizona governor decided to rescind the approval of the holiday. Lots of people boycotted travel to the state, and the Super Bowl was moved from Arizona to California in the early 90s due to this action. Arizona reaffirmed the holiday through a vote of the citizens in 1992, and they got their Super Bowl in 1996. Until the year 2000, South Carolina law allowed state workers to choose among MLK Day and two or three Confederate-related holidays to celebrate. A few years ago, city officials in Biloxi, Mississippi referred to the holiday as Great Americans Day. In city communications about offices being closed, they didn't mention it was Martin Luther King Day. These controversies remind us of the need for the holiday and the need to keep thinking about and working for equality of opportunity and social justice. The issue of race has been a difficult one throughout the history of our country. It's still a difficult issue. Some of the discrimination we see now is blatant, outright mistreatment of people of color. And some of the discrimination we see is more subtle, such as suspicion of a person who is different, or an institutionalized unfairness in some of our laws. Or maybe subtle discrimination can be seen in paternalistic treatment that the majority, who are the powerful we, know better than some without power. Or maybe discrimination is seen when fewer financial resources are given to inner city or rural schools with large populations of people of color. Or, one more example, people not being chosen for promotions or jobs because of stereotypes. It's very troubling that some successes in equal opportunity and racial equality that seem to have been made in the past have been lost in recent years. Seems like we're moving backwards in many ways on this issue. Violence against people of color and a political environment that allows for the most hateful racist rhetoric to be spoken makes me wonder if we can ever find that place that Dr. King described. So here we are in 2018, still trying to learn the lessons of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and knowing that making real, lasting progress on issues of race and economic justice will require us to stay awake. Yes, that stay woke maybe came from this quote. King said, "But today our very survival depends on our ability to stay awake, to adjust to new ideas, to remain vigilant, and to face the challenge of change." He said, "The large house in which we live demands that we transform this worldwide neighborhood into a worldwide brotherhood. Together we must learn to live as brothers, or together we will be forced to perish as fools." The title of this talk today is The Legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., a very big topic, and a topic that's often discussed by people who walked with Dr. King in Selma, or maybe were present for the I Have a Dream speech. This last week, I listened to some news stories and heard several people discuss Dr. King's legacy. Reverend Horace Sheffield, minister in Detroit and son of a colleague of Dr. King, said he sees King's legacy as understanding that life is about doing something for someone else. It is not about self. Here's a quote from the King Center website, and this quote is attributed to Coretta Scott King. She said, On this holiday, we commemorate the universal unconditional love, forgiveness, and nonviolence that empowered his revolutionary spirit. We commemorate his inspiring words because his voice and his vision filled a great void in our nation and answered our collective longing to become a country that truly lived by its noblest principles. She said, yet Dr. King knew that it wasn't enough just to talk the talk. He had to walk the walk for his words to be credible. And so we commemorate on this holiday the man of action who put his life on the line for freedom and justice every day. The man who braved threats and jail and beatings and who ultimately paid the highest price to make democracy a reality for all Americans. Dr. King would have been 89 years old this year. And yes, it was 50 years ago this year that Dr. King was killed. This holiday, this commemoration, and our celebration of this man's life work is very close to many people today. Close in two ways. One, close in that it's important, and also close in the sense that Dr. King lived and impacted our lives not really so long ago. Many people in this room will remember Dr. King being on TV, visiting cities where you lived maybe. Some of you may have participated in marches in the 50s and 60s. Some of you may have been children or teenagers who were impacted by the separateness of society at the time. There are other people who are here who are younger, and you have only lived since we have had a Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Whoever you are, whatever your life experience with events of the Civil Rights Movement and the movement for economic justice, it's clear that this history is not so distant, and it's clear that there is still much work to be done. As you know, when I speak here, I generally have some kind of maybe Mayberry-esque story from my childhood, an amusing joke or two, and some song lyrics to make a point. That's kind of the formula. I'm not sure about the joke this time. It's a pretty serious topic, but I think I can deliver on the story and song lyric. I like to frame my thoughts by putting them in context through stories. I hope my stories will remind you of the stories of your life. In this case, consider how your life was impacted and shaped by Dr. King and the movement for equality and civil rights for African Americans. When I first heard these song lyrics by Kate Campbell a few years ago, I thought it described my life as a young child during the civil rights movement of the 1960s. She wrote, "I was taught by elders wiser, love your neighbor, love your God. Never saw a cross on fire, never saw an angry mob. I saw sweet magnolia blossoms. I chased lightning bugs at night, never dreaming others saw our way of life in black and white." But there were angry mobs. There were crosses on fire. People were beaten, killed. People's lives were changed forever for no reason other than the color of their skin. It's difficult to watch the brutality in the newsreels from those years. Think of the courage that so many people who protested showed, both African-American citizens and white citizens, in the face of the unspeakable acts taken against them. And while we can all know how it feels to be the other in a group of people, we can never know how it felt to be the person of color walking peacefully for freedom, justice, and civil rights after their family had endured generations of being owned as property. We can never know the terror of their children who wondered if mom or dad would be home in the evening. I can look at this time in history and I can see it from where I was then. My perspective and my life were impacted, but more so as an observer, and maybe even after the fact as I learned more about this history as a teenager and an adult. Even so, my life was shaped by the events of those days, and I expect this is true for many of you. I was impacted in ways both small and large, and those events helped to shape the person that I am today. Race was not quite so simple as the song for kids like me in the 60s. Life was magnolia blossoms and catching lightning bugs at night, but it was a lot more complicated. I was born in 1958 in a small town in northeast Mississippi. As a young child, I saw separate water fountains in the county courthouse. I could read that one said white and the other said colored. I remember asking my mother where people who were not white went to the restroom at the courthouse. There was a whites only sign on the door. The answer, there was no place. A kindergarten teacher told me a few years ago that in 1964, some of the kids told me that I was segregated and they would not play with me at recess. It was because I had on clothes different than them. Yes, I was segregated because I had on pants and the other girls wore dresses. It is sad that a five-year-old knew the word and the definition of segregation and wanted to put it in place on the playground. I remember having to take home a card each year for my parents to sign and check whether I wanted to go to the school for black children called the Attendance Center or if I wanted to continue going to my school. This is the way Mississippi delayed school desegregation since everyone had a choice. I remember wondering what would happen if I checked the box for the Attendance Center. Then two black children began attending our school in the late 1960s after their parents checked the box for our school. I didn't know them because they were a little younger than me, but they didn't seem so different than all the other students in our school. And then in 1970, our schools were finally integrated, and I attended seventh grade at the Attendance Center. I met black children for the first time and made some new friends. As I got older, a few small things happened that made me aware of issues of inequality and mistreatment. And I learned in a very real way there was not equality or equal opportunity or equal treatment for everyone. When I was about 18, an older African-American woman in my town deferred to me in a drugstore. She apologized and called me Miss when I stepped close to her at the counter. This seemed strange to me since I was so much younger and I was the one who stepped too close to her. She had learned to defer, even when she should not have to do so. Once in the late 70s, I went to the Shady Nook Key Club in the Mississippi Delta with a friend to do a news story. This was a restaurant that only wanted to serve white people, so they locked the door and they looked out the window before letting you in, making sure you were the correct color first. It felt oppressive and wrong to be in that space. That kind of separateness of people based on skin color was wrong. I met a man named James Sun Thomas in the late 1970s. He was a blues singer who had some success in Europe in the 60s and then in the U.S. in the 1980s. Unscrupulous managers made sure he didn't keep the financial rewards of his talents. In the late 70s, he lived in a two-room shack with no electricity and no water. We drove 45 minutes to Leland, Mississippi to bring him to our dorm to sing. We always bought him dinner, a bottle of whiskey, and we gave him $40 for his time. Not bad in 1978. He had a small amp and a guitar, and he used a pop bottle slide, a broken glass Coke bottle, to play his music. He sang songs like Bumblebee and Sugar Mama Blues. He sometimes changed the words because he thought we were too young. He said we hadn't lived enough to hear the real lyrics. The dorm lobby was always packed with college kids, black and white, and we all felt the blues when he sang. This was a good lesson that there's something to learn from everyone. Mr. Thomas brought home to me the disparity in the lives of people, black and white, poor and middle class. It simply made no sense that his opportunities to be successful were less than mine. My parents shielded me from some of the terrible news of happenings in Mississippi, the South, and around the country related to race, as any good parent would do to protect their children. I remember when I was 10 and Martin Luther King Jr. was killed in Memphis. Memphis is about an hour and a half from my hometown. It was quiet for many, many days. There were lots of whispers by the adults. We were not allowed to watch the news for several weeks. I remember the quietness of this time and the concern on the faces of the adults. When Dr. King died, I was too young to understand the importance of this man. I didn't understand what was lost that day in the work towards civil rights and economic justice. I did know that change had arrived and our world was different because of his leadership. You could feel in the air in 1968 an understanding that our future would be different than our past. Some words that Joan Baez sang at some of the civil rights marches at the times have this feeling that there was no stopping the march for civil rights, for justice, and for freedom. She sang, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Keep on walking, keep on talking, gonna build a brand new world. So putting our own experiences in the context of historical events and leaders like King can help us understand how we have been personally changed and impacted by these movements. As a young child, I was very impacted by the entrenched bigotry, mistreatment, and hate. And I continue to be very impacted as an adult by these issues, knowing the opportunity and privilege I had been given that's been taken and kept from others. Think about how children growing up today will learn about racism and economic justice. Yes, they will learn about Dr. King, but there's more. Amadou Diallo, Trayvon Martin, Manuel Loggins Jr., Ronald Madison, Kendra James, Sean Bell, Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Alton Sterling. Each was a black man or woman who died at the hands of police. Their names represent only a handful of such cases since 1999, when Diallo, an unarmed man standing in a New York City doorway, was gunned down by officers who erroneously thought he had a gun. The death of Brown, who was shot by police officers in Ferguson, Missouri, in August of 2014, resulted in nationwide protest against what civil rights advocates said is law enforcement's tendency to be overly aggressive when dealing with black men. Remember the protest in 2017 when white nationalists and white supremacists went to Charlotte, and those recent Murfreesboro plans for protest when the protesters decided to stay away. People are speaking up in response to the violence by police against people of color. People protest, and groups are taking actions to right this wrong. Citizens have organized movements about equality and equal treatment, and others like Black Lives Matter and Murfreesboro Loves. Black Lives Matter became nationally recognized for its street demonstrations following the 2014 deaths of two African Americans, Michael Brown and Eric Garner. The Black Lives Matter movement was co-founded by three black community organizers, Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, and Opal Tomati. Yes, the movement most associated with Dr. King from 50 years ago continues. New faces and new leaders are working to solve many of the same issues Dr. King helped to make progress on in the 60s. In an article from The Atlantic, the author says, Martin Luther King's letter from a Birmingham jail ripples and echoes through much of the Black Lives Matter movement. Of course, the civil rights initiatives from Dr. King and others impact the Black Lives Matter movement. But this movement is also different. It's a movement for the 21st century. King said this, "Shallow understanding from people of goodwill is more frustrating than absolute misunderstanding from people of ill will. Lukewarm acceptance is much more bewildering than outright rejection." Tometi, using King's language, said, "The Black Lives Matter movement has run out of patience with the tolerance of that shallow understanding from people of goodwill, and the awaiting of a more convenient season, and the acceptance of order at the expense of justice." Dr. King taught us many values through his actions. He was a person of compassion, of courage, and of dignity. He was a person who lived his convictions. He didn't just tell us what he thought, he lived his beliefs. What an example for us to be who we are, to work on behalf of others, and to care deeply about what is right and good and just. In a sermon on February 4th, 1968, at Ebenezer Baptist Church, Dr. King told the congregation what he hoped his legacy would be. He said, "I'd like somebody to mention on that day that Martin Luther King Jr. tried to give his life serving others. I want you to say that on that day that I did try in my life to love and serve humanity." An obvious legacy of Dr. King's work is the passage of federal civil rights legislation. He led the Montgomery bus boycott in 1955. This was his first test of the use of civil disobedience in the quest for civil rights for African Americans. In 63, he wrote the letter from a Birmingham jail about the necessity for disobeying unjust laws, and he delivered his I Have a Dream speech in Washington that same year. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed after those events, and in 65, after the march from Selma to Montgomery, Congress passed the Voting Rights Act of 1965. I think there is more to the legacy that Dr. King gave us through his life's work than legislation, and I'll briefly mention five things. He gave us hope. He gave us an instruction and a model on how to take nonviolent action. He spoke truth to power. He modeled leadership for social change. He challenged us to make commitment to help others. So let's talk about hope. During his life, I think that Dr. King helped African American people who had not been given a real chance to be free, a belief in themselves and their abilities. He helped them understand that life could be better. He inspired people to work on their own behalf and to build a more just world. I think Dr. King also gave hope to those of us not mistreated because of our race, that we can all be partners in this society and that we're all in this together. In that iconic photo of Dr. King that we often see in news stories, we can see the sincerity and the hope in his eyes, even the expectation that everything will be made right one day. That photo makes me smile, and it reminds me to continue to have hope for a world made more fair, for all people to be judged, as Dr. King said, not by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. I have hope that we will continue to make progress in equality and economic justice in issues related to race and ethnicity. I have hope that someday, if we continue to work at it, civil rights and economic justice will be expected for everyone, no matter our race, ethnicity, gender identity, religion, or sexual orientation. Now, let's think about instruction in nonviolent civil disobedience. Dr. King showed us by example that monumental change can occur through nonviolent means. He said, "Nonviolence is a powerful and just weapon which cuts without wounding and ennobles the man who wields it. It is a sword that heals." King had traveled to India in 1959 to learn about Gandhi's use of civil disobedience to end British rule in India, and he used these lessons in his work. He also had read Henry David Thoreau's Civil Disobedience. In the last years of Dr. King's life, he was setting up offices in the North and in the Midwest, and he was working for economic justice. The Poor People's March was in the planning stages when Dr. King died, and he was also talking about his opposition to the Vietnam War. I wonder how our history might have been different if Dr. King had been able to lead the nonviolent movement for economic justice for an early end to the war in Vietnam. The lessons of nonviolence in the civil rights movement can be used today as we work towards social justice issues. The Side with Love initiative at the UUA is a good example of the continued use of nonviolent means to bring about social change. Whether working for immigration rights, Black Lives Matter, or other social issues, we can continue our efforts through nonviolent means and know we can make progress. Dr. King said, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that." Third point, Dr. King had strong opinions and he stated those even when some in his group thought he should be less direct. He spoke truth to power. We can do that as well. Here are a couple of examples. At the Riverside Church in New York in 1967, he talked about the Vietnam War. He said this, "A nation that continues year after year to spend money on military defense than on the programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. We are taking the black young men who had been crippled by our society and we're sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and East Harlem." So we have been repeatedly faced with the cruel irony of watching Negro and white boys on TV screens as they kill and die together for a nation that has been unable to seat them together in the same schools. One more example. During a sermon at Ebenezer Baptist Church in 1965, Dr. King talked about economic justice. He said, "About 2 years ago now, I stood with many of you who stood there in person, and all of you who were there in spirit, before the Lincoln Memorial in Washington. As I came to the end of my speech there, I tried to tell the nation about a dream I had. I must confess to you this morning that since that sweltering August afternoon in 1963, my dream has often turned into a nightmare." He said, "I've seen my dream shattered as I've walked the streets of Chicago and seen Negroes, young men and women, with a sense of utter hopelessness because they can't find jobs. I've seen my dream shattered as I've been through Appalachia, and I've seen my white brothers, along with Negroes, living in poverty. And I'm concerned about white poverty as much as I'm concerned about Negro poverty." King asked, "How are you going to have a multiracial democracy if inequality makes life so harsh and competitive at the bottom, where society is the most multiracial and multinational?" Yes, Dr. King was willing to tell it like it was, and his words had impact. Fourth point, Dr. King modeled leadership for a social movement. He said, "A genuine leader is not a searcher for consensus, but a molder of consensus." So a leader is not just a person searching for power's sake, but a person who helps mold the opinions of a group into effective action to get something accomplished. A real leader also helps others learn to lead. An organization or a movement that continues long-term will have a leader who mentors others and ensures that others can lead the cause where he or she cannot. Dr. King said on April the 3rd, 1968, one day before he was killed, "Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will, and he's allowed me to go to the mountain. and I've looked over and I've seen the promised land. I may not go there with you, he said, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. Dr. King knew that he could depend on others to take the lead in the movement for change if he could not. A few days after his death, his followers showed that they could continue the work using nonviolent means. You may remember that Dr. King was killed in Memphis on March 4th in 1968. He went there to support the sanitation workers who were on strike there. On the 8th of the month, in a testament to his followers' belief that Dr. King's nonviolent approach would work, they marched in Memphis to mourn King's death, even in the sorrow and the anger about the events. Following is an excerpt from a Memphis newspaper, The Commercial Appeal. Some reports of the day said that 40,000 people were in that march. This particular news article says there were 19,000. Here's the excerpt from the article. The nonviolent teachings of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. yesterday guided 19,000 mourning marchers. They marched silently down Main Street to City Hall, heard his widow challenge them to see that his spirit never dies, and then dispersed as quietly as they came without a single incident. They came on foot from North and South Memphis and by chartered jet from across the nation, North and South. They wore $50 a pair high heels and mud-coated work shoes, black mourning veils, and beatnik sunglasses. Dirge-like notes of "We Shall Overcome" were still echoing between City Hall and the 100 North Main building when the throng began to trickle away in all directions 5 hours after the downtown march began. Dr. King had left the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in good hands. Others there knew how to lead and continue to work that needed to be done. Ralph Abernathy, the new head of the group, repeatedly called for calm after King's death. He urged people to respect Dr. King's commitment to nonviolent protest. Unfortunately, though, peace did not prevail at that moment. The grief and anger were too great. Violence after King's death spilled into the streets in more than 100 cities. But the new leaders of the movement had learned the lessons of nonviolent action from Dr. King and had learned well how to take the movement to the next stage and to take care of the coalition of people working for civil rights. Dr. King also challenged us to have a personal commitment to serve others. He was committed to all efforts toward equality to serve other people. He said this, "Human progress is neither automatic nor inevitable. Every step toward the goal of justice requires sacrifice, suffering, and struggle. The tireless exertions and passionate concern of dedicated individuals." He challenged people to get involved and to be on the side of freedom and equality. Many people stood on the sidelines and watched. They didn't participate. It took courage to be an active participant because hate created so much violence. Not everyone could march, but everyone could do the something that they could do. King said, "History will have to record that the greatest tragedy of this period of social transition is not the strident clamor of the bad people, but the appalling silence of the good people." This statement challenges us today to not stand on the sidelines of life. If we need to march to draw attention to injustice, let's march. If marching is not in my comfort zone, let me find the thing I can do and participate in making things right. I don't ever want it to be said about me that I was a good person, but that I stood silent when I needed to speak, or that I stood still when I needed to take action. So let's rethink this question as a summary. What is Dr. King's legacy? Sure, it's the laws. Laws for equality and civil rights were passed during his leadership. But the legacy is more than that. He saw a world that was unjust, and he led the way in getting changes made. And he helped make progress. He helped move that moral arc of the universe toward justice. Today we celebrate Dr. King's life. He lives on in others' remembrances of him and in the good that he did to make a difference in our world. We learned his model for nonviolent action and for good principled leadership. More recent movements for equality have taken the lessons from King's leadership along with the passion and knowledge of their members and founders to continue this important work of equality. We maintain our hope that we can have a world more fair, but it will be up to us to be involved and to be active, to have the commitment and the courage of our convictions. Dr. King taught us something about who we really are as a country, or at least who we should be as a country. He taught us the type of people we should strive to be. We got to remember this, we're all in this together, and we must treat each other respectfully and help each other in this life. When he accepted the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964, Dr. King said that we must all evolve for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. He said that method is love. Dr. King's message is always about love. When he's talking about racial equality or economic justice or war or about God, the message is love. Listen to these statements made by Dr. King. That old law about an eye for an eye leaves everybody blind. At the center of nonviolence stands the principle of love. Hatred paralyzes life, love releases it. Hatred confuses life, love harmonizes it. Hatred darkens life, love illuminates it. And I have decided to stick with love. Hate is too great a burden to bear. We must all love one another. This is Dr. King's message, love. Think of the tragedies, large and small, we can avoid if we can ever get this one right consistently. Dr. King said this about the song, We Shall Overcome. He said, there's a little song we sing in our movement down in the South. You know it. And I've joined hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, We Shall Overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it. But we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. He said, oh, before this victory's won, some will have to get thrown in jail, but we shall overcome. We sang that song today. It's a song of resolution, a song of hope, a song of togetherness, a song of freedom, a song of peace, a song that reminds us there is work to do. Remember the lyrics. We'll walk hand in hand. We shall all be free. We shall live in peace. We shall overcome someday. Thank you.